Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Do you like professional wrestling? This week in the news, releases abound in the lazy river of wrestling criticism. There's Grand Slam Australia, which has already been taped, and Vengeance, which we're about three quarters through. I'll give some thoughts on that, in addition just the weekly television building those things. And in the Invader Club this week, Mako Satomura versus Io Shirai from the end of 2015. Let's shake them ropes. I'm Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Adulting sucks.
Dude, man, it is both good and also stressful. I was commenting to my significant other actually last night when we were hanging out. We had a lovely Valentine's Day, just like staying in and watching movies and stuff and having good laughs. But one of the things I was sort of thinking about is, man, if you had told me 5 years ago that like I was going to have to be the adults, that would have been so strange to Chris as he's trying to learn like a set list. Like, yeah, cool. What does that even entail? Like, when we say the adult, what does that mean? And then, you know, showing me the time crystal of my future, a la Christopher Pike.
Let me give a little insight to the kids out there. The difference between renting an apartment and owning a condo is that if something goes wrong in your apartment, the landlord might blow you off and, you know, you keep bothering him, et cetera, et cetera. In the condo, they say, hey, you can get it fixed and we'll pay you back. And then they'll deny your claim because you didn't do it right or something other than that. But they'll say, oh, go ahead and pay for it. We got you. And then they don't. But no, I'm sitting there and it's raining in Southern California. And all of a sudden I hear this dripping sound. I was like, did I spill something? What? No, I look. Oh, it's coming from the ceiling right by my MacBook because water can always find the electronics in the room for some reason. I'm just like, oh, that's a new one. And then around here, roofers won't come out while it's still raining. So, and it's, of course, it's right. Everything I have in my condo breaks right before a 3-day weekend. Like my air conditioner will break before a holiday weekend. I'm getting a leak in the middle of my 3-day weekend. Something floods right before a 3-day weekend. And of course, the community manager always takes that Friday off to have the big 4-day weekend. So it's like, can I just get this on the books? That's all I want right now. So that is why I'm in a different location from usual if you're watching on video. But let's get to the news. Yes, all companies seem to have been releasing people this week. AEW releasing Malakai Black, Miro, and Ricky Starks, all of whom had been wanting to go to WWE for a long time. And because of that, hadn't been used in AEW. Ricky Starks, the only one of the three who has thus far appeared on any form of television, him appearing on NXT doing the You Know Who I Am, which means he may not be Ricky Starks for very much longer. So I took that. WWE doing some cuts this week. Cedric Alexander, Blair Davenport, Sonya Deville, the authors of Pain, Paul Ellering, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, Isla Dawn, Giovanni Vinci, and Electra Lopez. And then over in TNA, Josh Matthews and Christy Hemme both released as they seem to be doing an overturn of front office stuff. I don't know if that has anything to do with the WWE relationship per se, but it might. Any rando thoughts you want on any of those, Chris?
Man, I, you know, I really like Giovanni Vinci, and I think Electra Lopez is a solid act. She's not like the most amazing wrestler in the world, but I see a managerial character for her or something. Like she's not, she's got a bit of like star screen, yeah, you know, panache to her. Isla Dawn is a bit of a surprise just because I thought, you know, her tag team with Kaylee Ray was very good. You know, they were doing good work as a tag team.
I need to backtrack a little bit and reword something because some people always go, well, you did. They weren't cut. They just said their contract wasn't being renewed. Okay. Sonya Deville's contract isn't being renewed, which was a little bit shocking to me because she got kind of a push in the Royal Rumble.
Right.
I am also a Giovanni Vinci fan.
And I like Sonya too.
I like her for what she is.
This round of cuts is a lot of people where I don't lay it at their doorstep. They were just not utilized well.
I think it's more of an age thing because they have all these people coming in for the LFG and because the training center is churning out has these 22, 23-year-olds. All these people are over 30, I think, other than maybe Electra Lopez and Blair Davenport. I'd have to check their ages. But they're just north of 30, most of them, and it's like, well, you know, there's not a lot of room up top, and they're kind of clogging the mid card. Like Fabian Aichner, which is what Giovanni Vinci was originally at, came in during that Cruiserweight Classic on NXT or on the WWE Network,
and
lost a bunch of weight, earned himself a job. And you know, eventually made it to the main roster for a couple of years. I think he outkicked his coverage. I love that dude. And I thought with Imperium, that was a solid act. And I think they should have kept them together. Cedric Alexander, people are saying, well, maybe the Hurt Syndicate, he goes back there and does that. I don't know. That just feels like a Ring of Honor signing to me. AOP, it looks like they really like, because, again, Vengeance Day is going on right now. They just debuted that foursome that had what's Dion Lennox and a bunch of other really giant dudes. So I'm thinking they're thinking two of those dudes are going to be equal to one AOP. But man, AOP and NXT, those some of those matches with like the Undisputed Era and DIY,
those multi-team FTR ones, they actually were really good in the multi-team match.
Yes.
Yeah, this is just these are guys, or all these talents are utilization issues to me, rather than they're not very good.
Right.
No, the AOP I think are good. And it just seemed like,
and I thought they were good heavies for that Karrion Kross Final Testament act. I always thought the weak part was Paul Ellering. What you needed was a younger manager for them.
I don't even know that you needed Paul Ellering.
No,
right?
You didn't.
Like, yeah, right. Like I get bringing him back just to give him some money, but I would just have Scarlett manage them, and they demolish people like a 3-minute warning or something.
Make her like Woman with Doom.
Yeah, she just sicks them on people, and they just start annihilating people. I think, again, utilization. AOP is good.
The Good Brothers will probably get a run in AEW because I mean, they've been everywhere and they do everything. But
I know,
Carl Anderson's kind of injured right now, so that's why that one was unusual, because they never cut people when they're hurt. Still.
Right? Yeah, but like, it's also funny that you mentioned, oh, they'll probably get a contract when they're of all of these teams we've discussed.
I didn't
so
say
far.
Contract. I think they'll get a run with. I think that there's going to be some sort of ironic off with them and the Young Bucks. I mean, you just can see it. I mean, it's right there in your face, kind of a thing, because they love that stuff. Malakai Black and Starks are definitely going to be back in WWE. Miro's the one I don't know about, because I know Miro wants to go back to WWE, but I don't know. I believe he and Lana are divorced now. I believe that was news a while ago. And to me, it was always Vince wants to push the hot blonde in the act and thinks the guy that she's married to isn't worth it. So that's why he was always kind of buried and cut there, is because of Vince. I don't know what Triple H thinks of Miro, but I know that Miro was, that NXT You know, he's the guy from NXT they bring into the Royal Rumble to eliminate a lot of people. And you go, oh my God, look at that kind of a thing, you know, when he made his debut. And then I thought, you know, he had a good run on the main roster, the Cena feud for the Palo Alto, not Palo Alto, but Santa Clara WrestleMania up there with the tanks and everything.
Yeah,
and
I was going to say the tank entrance is classic.
Yeah, and Rusev Day got more over than anybody would ever give it a right to. So,
and then, like, this sounds very strange, but I remain kind of a believer that part of the initial hiccup there around 2015, 2016 was just like weird politics circled around Russia, because we went from making Vladimir Putin jokes on Raw on a regular basis to cutting all ties from Russia at some point. That was an interesting move, and that definitely hurt Rusev, because he never really, once he became the Bulgarian again and he was no longer kind of the tropish Russian, a lot of steam came out of that engine.
Yeah, and a lot of the discourse, though, is AEW. Around with Malakai Black, Miro, and Ricky Starks, and people complain, well, they didn't want to lose, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, look, if they want to protect their brands and get paid, then you need to be a manager and tell them why they need to lose and how you're going to take care of them in the future, kind of a thing. To me, I didn't go as hard on them in terms of the quote-unquote refusing to job.
Well, Ricky Starks already got burned on this once with the Jericho Vortex.
Not just the Jericho Vortex, but also, like, his big problem was going to be with CM Punk. Remember, he was scheduled for that strap match, and then it was, right. and then Bryan Danielson eventually subbed in, but he was going to have a program with Punk to elevate him. He becomes a tag team wrestler, and I don't think he's happy about that, but that team was phenomenal with him and Big Bill. They just ran through FTR like a hot knife through butter. But I don't think they ever had any, you know, they didn't have any ideas after that kind of a thing. It's just like, okay, you're a team. Let's see what happens. Kind of like how they did Private Party on this last run. So I don't mind. I mean, to me, it's a two-way street. The wrestler is the brand. And if they're going to say, I'm not losing to this guy, you as the manager either have to not give them a guaranteed contract where they can do that kind of leverage to you, or you need to be able to explain to them why this loss matters and just tell them you're going to do the job or you're fired kind of a thing. And if, you know, those, it's just so, and of course, you know, Malakai Black just wants to be with his wife back at the other place. So, I mean, he's going to be a malcontent and whatever. I don't know.
Well, he's kind of got a history of being a malcontent.
Yes. And he also has a history of having sweet nothings whispered in his ear by people and believing them. So, you know, you never know. I don't know. And you know, I hate talking right after people are fired about where do you think they're going to go next? Cause it's like, dude, people just lost their jobs. Don't, there's a bit of a respect thing in there, but I hope wrestling is strong enough where everybody gets work. That's all I hope for everybody else. Second court of U.S. Court of Appeals on February 7th upheld a previously unreported district court ruling involving the government's investigation of Vince McMahon. The too long didn't read version is that in this NDA thing with the SEC, Vince had was using text messages instead of email to get around attorney-client privilege. The SEC case was settled, but then the district court just came out with the ruling saying, yeah, he had violated attorney-client privilege. And there's a lot of weird wording in the news articles because the news articles say the grand jury is still seated, which means there's an ongoing investigation. Vince McMahon's attorney is saying, no, this thing got settled and there's no criminal charges coming.
I thought there was ambiguity about the grand jury.
The ambiguity is saying
is
that
even what the grand jury is on, right?
Well, the words are currently before a grand jury. So yes, we don't know if it's talking about the SEC investigation or if it's talking about the sex trafficking investigation or if there's another ongoing criminal investigation within there. Yeah.
To that point, there's ambiguity about the nature of the grand jury.
A lot of people talking. That's the other thing. It's like Vince McMahon's attorney is blah, 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 blah. You know, the people, you know, Janelle Grant's attorneys is talking to whoever will listen about different various things.
So I guess in advance of our cherry pickers out there, our beloved farmers, we must support our farmers, Jeffrey. I will qualify this with like an if blank is true sort of thing. So if we are to believe what McMahon's attorney is saying,
yes,
and that the criminal probe is being wrapped up here.
And let me add a bit of note here, because it says the investigation being dropped came on the same day, or said it was being dropped, came on the same day that the SEC announced a $400,000 fine against Vince McMahon for withholding two recent NDA settlements, a $7.5 million with a former performer in the mid-2000s, and a $2 million... Oh, $3 million settlement, of which only $1 million was paid to Janelle Grant, et cetera, et cetera. This had to do with the SEC filings on profits, et cetera.
Again, for our cherry pickers out there, we support our farmers. If what McMahon's attorney is saying is true, and there is not merely coincidence but a correlation between these two things, then the thing I went back to was the quote from McMahon last year, where he was proudly proclaiming his complete and total innocence and his complete victory on it. And if anything, if this bears out, and I'm now slightly alarmed about this and I'm preparing to do a mea culpa on it, if this bears out, Jeffrey and I made a mistake in dunking on McMahon unrelentingly for being a horrible person, in that no court in the world can possibly exonerate him for his awfulness. And instead, we should have maybe considered why McMahon would say such a thing in such a way beyond just merely ego and hubris. Perhaps it is the case that the Southern District of New York, the DOJ, there's many different departments here, and the SEC, these are the two.
This is actually District in Connecticut, SDN.
District in Connecticut, okay. A district in Connecticut, okay. See, like, that's what I'm saying. So we have a criminal side, and we have this civil SEC side. And it seems to me, increasingly, that the SEC...
I need to correct you. The SEC was a criminal probe because of the...
Of
the filings and stuff like that, because that's considered fraud. So
I guess what I'm saying is he was facing financial penalties, not criminal penalties. Like
right
not,
now,
like,
yes.
Right, and not jail. He wasn't facing jail with the SEC stuff. He was facing...
No.
Yeah, he was facing money.
They weren't sure if the things that he was going to be accused of within the SEC could then bring on further criminal
charges.
Yes.
Sure. Right. But the SEC's, when I say it's civil, it's
mostly going to be civil.
The distinguishment here is in the nature of the penalty, and then also in the nature of the way the case is litigated, right? It's the difference between a preponderance of the evidence versus beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yes.
Right. And like, that's extraordinarily relevant for the people who want this to go to the criminal level. And like, essentially the metaphor I'd use in a basketball parlance is, I believe that the criminal justice organization entity writ large, DOJ, SEC, all of them, I'm rolling them into a big Katamari ball here. I believe that they preferred to shoot the two-pointer rather than try to go for the three here. That it was easier to get McMahon on a preponderance of the evidence for what he is, what was out there with the SEC, than it was to try to get him beyond a reasonable doubt on some of these bigger felony charges.
Yes.
And that they leveraged that to get the SEC stuff, and that's what's motivating McMahon's attorney. Now, I hope that that's not the case. I want to make sure, again, Jeff, I got to get stuff out of here, because the cherry pickers need to be able to hear all of this stuff and eat their seeds. I hope that that's not the case. I, like you, I would believe, Jeff, hope that McMahon rots the rest of his life in a maximum security prison. Nothing would make me happier. I'd love to see him in orange for the rest of his life. But I don't think that that's where this is going.
No.
I think that this is what tends to be the parlance of anything. Now, would you like to hop in here just to make sure that
I would like to hop in a little bit of an explainer for those who you know, I'm sure people know the difference between civil and criminal court, but
I am not so sure about that after this week here.
Maybe not, but like when you say beyond a reasonable doubt, that the percentage that you're told is you know, 90 to 95%. Yeah, that this happened, that this crime happened, you know, that everything that the charges being said are completely true, and that there's no if, there's no iffy there, and there's no, you know, you can have a little bit of doubt, but would a reasonable person, if you laid out this case for them, would they find them guilty? That's what beyond reasonable doubt is. There's no doubt. It's the reasonable man test kind of thing. Preponderance of the evidence is kind of a, I would see, it's weird because people differ on the percentages, but it's like 50-60% that, yeah, they're probably liable for this happening kind of a thing. The standards are much lower in a civil procedure. The thing that got me was Dave Meltzer talking about how the charges were probably dropped because of the new administration, et cetera, et cetera. But in the New York Post article, it says that this happened, if it happened.
During the lame duck period.
Happened. Well, no, not even the lame duck period. Between September and January 10th. So September is even before the election.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's before the election. But like, I mean, a lot of the timeline would be during the lame duck period.
And I'm here to tell you guys that's not how the feds work. If the feds think they have a felony and it doesn't matter who the politics are, as we saw this week, they want the conviction. Like, you can go in there and pardon or whatever, but we want the conviction first, and then you can make the deal or whatever. It's not Trump's coming in and Vince McMahon's wife may be in the administration and, we may not be able to get him. So let's just let it bygone. No, feds don't work that way. Usually if they've been assigned to a case and they've been working on it hard, they're not just going to say, yep, yeah, good game, everybody. Shake hands, all that other stuff. To me, if this is all true and whatnot, then there is a certain standard of evidence not being met, or it's a quid pro quo, like you said, where it's like, okay, the SEC, you pay the fine and we drop the other investigations or whatever.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, going back to, yeah, it's a wide timeline, but when's the most likely date? Go back to the McMahon quote, because yes. What could possibly have motivated that quote other than that? Yeah. Like, it's like waking up and just be like,
and the feds aren't gonna,
you're innocent.
You yeah, know? And the feds aren't going to announce, well, we've disbanded the jury, grand jury and whatnot, et cetera, to the media or whatnot. They rarely say what they're doing in public, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you can believe McMahon's attorney. It's one of those things.
I tend to think he's right, which is why I'm running with this. And so then I want to circle back to the last thing here, which is, now that we have a forward context on this story, the idea that WWE's fake staged pseudo press conferences that they do after their pay-per-views, that they shoot on their own cameras, was ever a vehicle for affecting change on this.
Right.
It seemed impotent last week. Now it was completely a no-win scenario. All you would have been asking for is for people to perform career immolation on camera for your amusement, asking a question so as to never get back, and for having that one question be the peak of whatever modest little hobby career they had built for themselves as a wrestling nerd.
Yeah, and that was my point, was all the criticisms were in bad faith for the most part.
Well, I guess my point is they were in bad faith. I know this, but now, with the benefit of hindsight and additional information, they were in even worse faith.
Yeah, well, I mean,
point here. But the outrage, Jeffrey, the outrage factory needs to do a recall.
They won't, you know that.
I know they won't. That would involve them growing as people.
Well, they don't care about either party, so why should they? You're an old New Japan fan, somewhat. Hiroki Goto finally won the IWGP World Title.
Oh, cool.
I'm, you know,
I mean, he was the perennial guy.
Yes.
Who was in the mix.
He should have never won the thing. I don't care.
I think Lanza called him the Tommy Dreamer of New Japan.
Yes,
I thought that was perfect.
That's a perfectly good story.
It was perfect. Yeah, it was great.
I like guys that don't win the big one because then the emotion is all in the chase and you can continue that. Once they get that, I mean, I get it. He was important. Now you can say, you can take it off of him immediately. You can just say, oh, that's it. See you later.
I know, right? I don't mind the thank you championship runs, but especially with New Japan, this last 10 years, they have really felt a bit rudderless as a ship. They've really been struggling in the wake of AEW's advent.
It's so interesting because people complained post-mortem for years about the NWO and how NWO ruined booking in WCW. And I think Bullet Club did the same. And all the various, you know, House of Torture and offshoots of that are what really got... I mean, don't get me wrong. They got raided a few times and some of their major stars left for greener pastures.
And they sold a shitload of t-shirts. But that became the biggest. I mean, it's very much Bullet Club is NWO for that golden era of New Japan in the sense of it started off as a good thing. It helped gain interest and even get some new eyeballs on the product. And then it overstayed and it became this thing that obstructed any new creative construction of what Gaijin factions should look like.
And that became a Tesla coil because it's like, okay, we're going to have different factions within the Bullet Club going, and you're like, all right, whatever. WWE Hall of Famer Road Dogg Brian James has been named the new co-lead writer for the SmackDown brand along with John Swicata.
I don't like Road Dogg. I don't like him.
I hate his Twitter presence.
I do too. I think he's insipid. I think he's defensive.
I think he's thin-skinned.
Thin-skinned, and I think he's like a corporate shill.
Online. He's a hunter guy. So I mean,
Get obviously you can't bash the company, but there's a difference between not bashing the company and needing to relentlessly defend the company. And I just don't care for Brian James. I don't think
SmackDown did our boy dirty. So it's one of those things where I'm just kind of like, screw SmackDown for the most part. But it's one of those things where if I'm the other co-lead writer, I'd be wearing a phone book around my chest and whatnot. You know, as you're walking down the hall. SmackDown is.
You need to keep the phone book on your back because that's where the knife's coming from.
Oh, no, he's coming to you from the front.
Road Dogg? No. Backstabber.
Well, no, he's a backstabber, like, behind closed doors, but to you, he's gonna butter you up to your face, probably.
That's a backstabber!
I know. I'm trying to save myself, and I can't.
On semantics, Jeffrey?
Look, prison life is hard for... Dominic Mysterio. it's one of those things. Like I sat down and watched SmackDown last night. I had it on while I was playing. It's like there's good stuff. Like Nia Jax and Tiffany had a decent match, and Charlotte declared for that. But it's like I'll give you a match that's like this is becoming Rampage really quick. It's like LA Knight versus The Miz. That is the most mid-card WWE. Don't want to watch it match.
Oh my god.
Semi entertaining but not quite there yet promo battle that I what a scene.
Right. Both of them actually could have a very entertaining on the mic feud. And if they found a way to have gimmicky style matches that told interesting stories, I think it could be a surprisingly entertaining mid-card feud that you and I are throwing a few roses at the feet of. So I'm not writing off The Miz versus LA Knight outright, although I also labor under no delusions that this is going to be a work rate classic. I just think these guys are entertaining enough to make my TV screen not a vortex of hatred.
It's something with potential.
I don't need to see this.
My God, nobody needs to see. I thought when he joined with the Final Testament, I thought, okay, cool. We're going to get a nice, fresh new coat of paint on The Miz. He's going to be a more interesting, deeper character with some, you know, some character-y notes in there.
Idea of Karrion Kross really playing with his head.
Or he knows that Karrion's trying to play with his head. He's actually taking over the Final Testament from within kind of a thing. It becomes this, you know, he becomes a Kaiser Soze type character. Nope. Must see, blah, blah. Oh, God, you've been doing this for 20 years, kid, and I love you, but I know you got to play the hits when you're on WWE television, but it was just like, God, that's like,
oh okay, no,
we're gonna have Private Party versus Top Flight on Rampage for the 800th time, and you're just like, oh. No thanks.
And I feel bad for The Miz too, because costumes wise now, like, Seth Rollins has basically stolen his gimmick too.
Yes.
So he really does need this fresh coat of paint of like, all right, when Seth Rollins is the dress like an asshole market cornered, Miz coming out there and doing that, he can't out Rollins. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so
he especially when Rollins is fighting his wife to see who can be the most eccentric on camera type of a thing.
Like, but I would love it if Cross, playing with Miz's head, made Miz just come out like straight black tights, and like all of a sudden there's like the crazy eyes.
Yeah.
You know, like we focus in like his logo does, where it's on the eyes, like, only we're kind of getting a little bit of a Mr. Backlund Miz, you know, where
everybody points to the pre-WrestleMania one, where he's like watching all the tape of people before who preceded him. And it's like, okay, that's a cool look. And then they did nothing with it. They never do anything with this other than they talk about how he's good with, you know, he can go and work the media and stuff like that. It just reminds you, oh yeah, this is the Road Rules guy that they just, or the Real World guy that they decided to bring up on the TV, and they just always undercut his, you know, his viability, because they'll say, oh, you were a champ but you suck, you know, that kind of thing. Every like half of that Sammy promo was always, oh yeah, you're a former world champion but you suck, kind of a thing.
You were like a shitty world champion who we couldn't do any business through. I mean, the
you
worst
were Tommy
part,
Rich.
Right, yeah, the worst part is whatever they talk about is like history, there's always this implication of, yeah, but you couldn't draw a dime, you're Jeff Jarrett.
There's an asterisk by this. We're going into the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we saw this week. I'm gonna tell you that I'm not gonna spoil Grand Slam Australia. It's been taped. No big surprises out of that. But Chris, I really liked AEW Dynamite this week, and I don't know if it was because they didn't have a lot of the top guys there. I don't know if it was because it was taped and then edited down, so it felt tighter to me. But to me, it kind of reminds me a bit of, you remember that one SmackDown when like half the crew couldn't get back from Saudi Arabia, and so they brought up the NXT people, and there was like a real weird fresh energy to it, like that MJF Page stuff where MJF just cuts the brakes on being goofy and really cuts Page to the quick. I loved that stuff. I loved the Harley Cameron. Okay, she's doing the goofy puppet stuff, and then that stops, and she's just looking at the camera and giving a serious promo type thing. Everything felt heated. Everything felt like it mattered, kind of a thing. The only drawback to me was Copeland doing member berries about his WWE career. It's like, oh, I used to hold a briefcase, and oh, here's a, what's the name of it? Is it Spike or the bat that I didn't even remember that from WWE, but apparently everybody's supposed to remember he used to carry around a bat with spikes on it of some kind. That was the only,
man, I don't remember that at all. I really kind of remember him having a bat at one point when they sort of had him ripping off Sting early in his career.
This was, I believe this was after Negan on The Walking Dead.
Okay,
brought out the spike bat or whatever, so he decided to do the kind of the same thing, type of a thing. But overall, I mean, AEW to me, at least,
and I think of that as Jericho's move.
Yeah, that's Jericho's move quite a bit, but like you had
which apparently he ripped off of Edge.
What? Jericho ripping someone off?
No way. I know, but that's actually funny now. It's like him bringing that up, all it makes me think about is, wasn't Jericho doing that like a few years ago?
And it comes off the heels of an actually strong collision the previous Saturday. Like, Brian Keith and Bandido had a really nice match leading up to like a 10-pace type thing where they both turn around and just run and kick each other in the head. I'm watching Collision. I'm like going, this is actually far better than I expected it to be. So, I mean, for all our trashing of AEW, you're not going to get a lot of that from me. You know, even like the Gun Club looked pretty good for a while there versus the Hurt Syndicate. It looked like they got a little bit lost there towards the end and kind of started like mashing the X on the controller and doing the same move over and over again. But I thought, you know, I thought that tag title match was pretty good too. So no complaints from me from AEW Dynamite. Just wanted to bring that up. Your turn.
Yeah. No, I'll just kind of do, we'll do Dynamite. We can move on here at this point. I think Harley Cameron is a personality this show has sorely needed. Someone who, I mean, I guess she could be a smidge annoying or whatever with like the hyper talented,
the heavy comedy stuff.
Yeah. And let me show you every talent
everything
that I've ever
every
had.
Time. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I can do ventriloquism and talk Chinese. I'm going to do that right now.
And I can play guitar. It's like, all right. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's another thing of a bit of a jack of all trades thing. Like, okay. It does sort of feel like, especially when she does the exhibitions the way she does it, she knows a bit of ventriloquism. She knows a bit, and I know guitar, a bit of guitar, and she probably knows a bit of Chinese, of Mandarin specifically.
And a bit of wrestling.
Yeah, right. And like, it's impressive to have all these different interests and be committed enough to, like, you know, learn stuff about them or whatever. But like, I don't know. I don't think that that's doing as much for her, or like showing off this resume of being a jack of all trades or a Jill of all trades, does as much for her as just, she's got a great personality. I think, you know, the camera loves her. I think she is likable and she's well spoken, and
she has funny bones too. I'm not going to deny her comedic talent.
Yeah.
She actually has phenomenal comedic timing and stuff. If you see like the things with her and Lexi backstage from, you know, from 2 or 3 months ago, I mean, she has that. It's just in wrestling, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, okay, this is the comedy build that you can do with Mercedes, but either way how that match goes, and I'm not gonna spoil it for anybody because it's playing later tonight, either way, now you have to be serious after this to me to go to that next level of wrestling stardom. And I don't know if she can resist the siren song of getting the comedic pop.
Jokes. Yeah, I know. It's the same problem with MJF, right? It's the discipline to avoid the zinger or the laugh line or the Jimmy Fallon moment in favor of the more disciplined, mature, serious build.
And he did a good job of that this week, I thought. When Paige in that one-on-one, when they're backstage, and he's and Paige cuts him to the quick and goes, "It's been 5 years. Is that all you got?" And then he realizes his material isn't working, and he kind of shifts to serious thing where he goes, "This isn't you," type of a thing, and he's absolutely correct, and he's just basically saying your character is too emo, shut up and fight or something like that. I loved that this week.
Yeah. No, I think they're getting Paige back on track, but man, I still think it's going to probably take the better part of the year to really get him on solid ground again.
I would agree. I'm not as convinced as others that he's... See, what AEW has been lacking in all its world champions, because they went with heel champions for the chase, and that's a very territory thinking type thing. And the thing that WWE has always done better than anybody in the history of their promotion in terms of from the 80s on, I'm not going to deny that Bruno Sammartino and what, well, Bruno's part of that too with the triple WF, is here is our big babyface champion, and he's the guy, and he is the spokesperson for this company, and he's going to represent our company in all facets. Type of a thing. AEW has never done that very well. They kind of tried with Paige, but he was still doing the emo cowboy stuff. You know, Kenny was a heel, Jericho was a heel, Moxley was kind of there.
In a way, their original sin was going with the heel champion to start things off.
Yeah, again, the biggest mistake they ever made was not taking the Elite and pushing them to the moon as these are the best people in wrestling right now, and you want to watch them.
Oh, I don't know. I'd say the biggest mistake they ever made was not pushing Cody Rhodes as a main event act. But, that you know, too. I guess, you
but
know, people can
elite.
Argue
that's
dollars not, I mean, and cents.
I'm arguing him as part of the Elite, as part of the vice president.
Okay, sure. Yeah, it was one of the vice presidents. Yeah, right. Like, you know,
Omega and the Bucks were the guys at the time, and they needed to have the belts, I thought. And then you can put a secondary title on either Cody, which he did, or Paige, and just go on with it. But it was just one of those things where they never got the thing that the AEW fan base wanted, and that's what they wanted.
But
they,
I'm sorry, Edge and Jay White, Edge and the Switchblade are not the heart and soul of AEW. No. They are not the beating heart of anything. Jay White's an okay promo, but I'm
not impressed with him as a promo.
I'm not impressed with him. Yeah, right. It's never bad.
But it's not great either.
Right.
It's
can't sit there and parse it and be like, well, that was shit. No, but it's just never. I'm like, damn, let's go. This whole top of the card, actually,
and I hate to say that, but in terms of a promo, it's always the same thing. It's like, yes, I'm part of the Bang Bang Gang. I want to fight, you know, kind of a thing. He's kind of miscast as a babyface a little bit to me.
And there's too many catchphrases. I mean, yes. It's not quite.
You don't
Kenny
believe
Omega's.
It. You don't think it's from the heart. You think it's from a wrestling promo script.
No, yeah. You think it's from the word bank.
Yes.
You know, I the Bang Bang Gang and all of the accoutrement of the Bullet Club, and then also couple that with the fact that the Bullet Club stuff, as we discussed earlier, is just stale. It's just stale. No one cares in 2025.
I'll let you go again. I talked a little bit too much about yours.
I mean, that's okay. Okay, we will move it over to, I guess we can move it over to NXT. Obviously, we've got Vengeance Day going on here.
I will recommend that Stephanie Vaquer and Fallon Henley was very good, but the tag team match was fantastic. And you guys should watch it. Fraxium versus Unimura and Josh Briggs. I think that it is Unimura, right? Did I get the name right or did I butcher?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Oh, I mean, that match, that match got, I mean, the chops in that match, or you just go, oh, hose me kind of a thing. I mean, there was some manly chopping going on in that match. I haven't checked the results of the four-way, but I'm going to do that while you talk about this week's NXT.
Really wish that the Fandango return meant friggin' anything, but Alexis King, and this characterization around Alexis King has become a complete charisma vortex again. He is one of the most Brian Pillman Jr. is one of the most perplexing talents of the last 3 years, because it was back in AEW, he just couldn't talk. He wasn't any good at that. And like, he'd come out, he'd have halfway decent matches, but he just couldn't talk and he couldn't get anything he was trying to do over or get any points across. Then he comes to NXT and they give him this Lexus. And all of a sudden, the skill set inverts. He can talk, he's got a character, but now the athleticism has been sapped from him.
Yes.
And then they start playing around with the different characterizations of him, including a strange and baffling interaction with Lord Stephen Regal, William Regal. And that brings us to this point now where he is like the heel Heritage Cup champion. He's stripped away all of the elements of the Heritage Cup that make the Heritage Cup the Heritage Cup.
Well, it's weird because he's the heel who took it away from kind of a heel.
Right.
And now is doing the heel thing better than the former heel was doing the Heritage Cup thing.
Right. But now we're not doing the Heritage Cup thing.
Right. Now we're just cheating to win all the time.
Right.
And we're doing one fall
to a finish. Yeah.
Screw your rounds thing.
I find him baffling. And then we bring back Fandango and this JDC thing that he's been doing in TNA. I get it. You know, he's aging up. He doesn't want to be Fandango anymore, but like, I don't know, man, you come out to the music.
I think it's also an Impact thing.
Is it? Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Because like, He's Johnny Curtis over there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he can't even be Johnny Curtis over here.
Well, you know, this is how the fans know him over here. So he kind of has to be Fandango here, and he has to be JDC over there due to trademark implications.
I know. Yeah. Okay. I get it. I mean, I like one with the contract talent sharing deal they have, they should be able to use the names too. I think the easy move here is, you know, here he is, Fandango, and in quotes, Johnny Curtis. You know what I mean? Like, you know, yeah. Like, yeah, right. Like, you know, like, don't you're he's both, right? Like, you know, Johnny quote Fandango Curtis, you know, like, and that's his nickname is Fandango, but his name is Johnny Curtis.
The Dango in JDC stands for.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Like, you know, he can be Dango. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So. I don't know. That was my big point is Lexus King and JDC. I still think, you know, JDC, Johnny Curtis still has something, but I think that this deployment of him was completely useless.
And I was mid. It's very mid is the word I'd use for it. I'm going to give some props to somebody I've given props to a lot, but boy, you talk about someone working hard this week. Aunt Pam, my girl Bailey. Monday has a banger against Lyra Valkyria on Raw. Tuesday comes in, does her thing on NXT. Friday, last night, she's up in San Francisco doing the or up in the Bay Area doing the NBA celebrity game, and then takes the red eye out to DC today to do the four-way on NXT for the championship. I'll spoil that. Julia retained. Not that anybody didn't think she would, but my God, I'm like, people who, I mean, she loves this next generation of women because they're her girls. They're the people who looked up to her. She has a posse. And if you follow her on social media, you know how much, you know, Roxanne, Cora, who was I just thinking of? I can't remember who, but you know, Lyra, even Julia and Stephanie Vaquer. I mean, all JC Jane.
Yeah, I was gonna say JC hasn't gotten a chance to really work with Bailey.
JC didn't get a chance, but you know, she might in the near future. And then also Kiana James is part of that crew. Just a lot of people who just want to sit at that learning tree, so to speak, of Bailey. And boy, it was just, she didn't get to do anything in that NBA game, and that was kind of disappointing. She just got out there for a little bit to play a little bit of defense, but she was obviously thrilled by it. But she's having herself a week. I really liked that Lyra Valkyria match for the chamber spot. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, I think Lyra's been turning in great work, and yeah,
she really has.
Bailey is the, you know, it's weird calling her a veteran. She's only in her mid-30s, but she workhorse. She's the workhorse that helps get all of the other young stallions up to speed. And in a, like, Natty used to do this pretty well back in the day. I think Bailey does it even better.
Yes. I think, Bailey was always a little bit better than Natty at that
point. Well, yeah, no, I know. But, like, one thing I'd always say about Natty was that she is a very good player coach.
Yes, she is.
She's a good teacher. She just was never a great match in and of herself.
Right. Your turn, sir.
All right. You did Bailey. Was there anything else on here? God, this Rich Holland versus Tony D'Angelo thing. Oh my God.
I'm surprised Rich Holland. I mean, if I were Rich Holland, I wouldn't answer my phone.
Right. Man, it feels like they are. It feels like they are just doing everything with this guy on his way out the door.
If they're not bringing him up for the New Day, and by the way, the ending of that Netflix show where I think they cut off a little bit too early, but I loved the ending where it's the New Day just beating up on Ray and it just goes black. I was like, that's kind of cool. I like that. Yeah. But yeah, if Ridge, it looks like they're not going to make Ridge the third guy, but I'm just like, man, for an Izzy Dame turn angle. Okay.
I know, and I think Izzy, as you know my feelings about Tony D'Angelo's mafia, but I think that Izzy Dame was better served as a babyface trying to gain a little bit of crowd support and personality through the Tony D'Angelo mafia than whatever the Ty Dillinger, Sean Spears cult faction thing is that has no story behind it.
The Royal Rumble winners both selected to me the B champions, which is interesting. So they're going to quote unquote main event Mania, but you know, they're not really the biggest matches that you can think of. I mean, Jey Uso and Gunther, and then now Charlotte Flair and Tiffany Stratton. And it's kind of like a, hey, how about that for me? I'm like, well, I mean, it's always kind of been a little bait and switchy with the Rumble at times. I mean, the biggest culprit of that was the year that I went to the Rumble with Rob McCarron. We went to Philly, and then Asuka and Nakamura both won. Yeah, then you did the dream match with AJ Styles that ends in like a dick kick, and you're just like, that's not a dream match kind of a thing. I don't know. It's weird because I like Gunther and I like Jey Uso. It's just, I don't think Jey Uso is going to get there on the promos to really, you know, get the emotional connection there. And Gunther has felt almost, he feels like a B player with the main title more than he did with the Intercontinental title to me.
I have that same feeling. It's like, weirdly, this is less prestigious for some reason.
Especially due to the doubt story of that. I think that may have been the thing that killed him right there.
However, go ahead. I really like the Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte pairing potentially because I think that Charlotte might actually be the perfect foil for Tiffany Stratton to get over big time as a baby.
As a baby face? Okay.
Yes. I think Charlotte is perfectly unlikable in a way that services Tiffy. And like when Tiffy roasts her, it gets under her skin. It upsets Charlotte. I think that's going to get people behind her. Charlotte's big enough that when she does the beatdown on Tiffy, it'll look convincing and people will be behind her. And I don't think anyone in that WrestleMania audience, the big ticket, big money audience, are going to want to see Charlotte win. So if they tell the right story, Tiffy's going to be over like Rover coming out of WrestleMania.
It's fascinating because they haven't quite... On SmackDown, she is a babyface, but she's a babyface only insofar as she's fighting Nia Jax and Candice LeRae, who are a sneaky good team together because Candice LeRae is fantastic. And Nia takes a lot of crap, especially from Wrestling Observer subscribers, but she's improved.
Dude, she's gotten so much better. Yeah, she's clearly improved from back. Because we were firmly in the critical camp. I believe, you know, you were like, oh, I'm too critical at one point. I think she's gotten much better.
Oh, yeah, I think she's improved. But it's one of those things, and it's like her promos are still a little bit heelish. But then again, there's also just Charlotte just shouts into the mic instead of actually cutting a promo at times, so you don't know if she's a babyface or heel. She just says she's a Flair and woo and all that
Whoa.
Other stuff.
She does things that are grating and nepotism-y and...
But Chris, I think she's going over Tiffany. I think Triple H wants to give her the, 16 titles or whatever to break her old man's record. I think she's going over Mania, so I think you're going to be disappointed. A little bit.
I think you're going to be disappointed.
I'm
Jeff.
Always disappointed, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to break your spirit again.
Well, I don't have anything else to you. So,
I don't know that I do.
Let's go into something not disappointing then.
Yeah, let's do it.
Vader Club. Mako Satomura versus Io Shirai. My goodness, did I enjoy this match. Io Shirai is three cups of crazy. In this match, that moonsault over the entranceway in the aisle in the stands was Mako Satomura's doing her kick routine and just beating the snot out of her. And the ending sequence of this, which I think we saw in the last match we saw with Mako, but you know, she does a Death Valley Driver, gets a two, she just picks it right back up, does a Death Valley Driver again, gets a three. Always works with me because she's not doing the WWE style histrionics of, oh my God, I can't believe she kicked out. Nope. I'm here to win a match. I'm going to go hard at it and I'm going to keep on you after you kick out at two and I'm going to beat you eventually. But Or no, she didn't. Wait, she didn't win, did she? No, I can't even remember who won this match, because then never mind. Kicked out too, and then Io Shirai did a whole bunch of aerial stuff. Like she
Io comes out on top.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I'm misremembering things. I've been watching so much wrestling this week. But it's like Io did the I kind of howled because she did kind of the same drop kick that Zoe Stark did to knock out Dakota Kai, and I'm like, Mako Satomura should be concussed right now, and she's not. Io just does the best moonsaults. I she's so smooth, and then she does. Oh, that's right. She does what's now the insane elbow. Even though I think Kairi does a better elbow, but she still did the whole shifting the hips thing in the elbow drop. That thing was fantastic too. I really enjoyed this match.
Mako for her part. I mean, I love. As you mentioned, I love the defiance of the WWE rhythm after the two count. Instead of doing the mouth agape, that was three, holding up the fingers to the referee.
Becky Lynch grab her brow, stroke her chin, grab her brow, stroke her chin thing. Wipes her mouth. I don't know what to do anymore. No, I'm a professional wrestler. Yeah.
You know, pulling out their phone, Googling moves and stuff. I
love that as a gimmick, though.
That would actually be really funny.
The Miz. What's a move I could do right now?
Actually, way better. Calling out to your manager, what do I do now?
Go 34. Go for it, kid.
Yeah, like the manager's out there looking feverishly on his phone trying to figure out another move.
Quick, give me your laptop.
slides in the tablet so that the guy can hit play on the YouTube thing. This is how you do a Canadian destroyer. Try this.
They have the Microsoft tablets that the NFL uses. And he's drawing with a pen going, I don't know if I can do that. I don't think I have the ups. Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, try this then. I really like this. I like the idea of the two count inspires you further to go deeper for the kill shots.
Yes.
I think that that's way better. I think that gives a better vehicle for the person in peril, whether they're the baby face or do something in reaction to the kind of the circling.
Yeah,
right.
Like
so if you're the heel and someone's getting a near fall on you and they just got a two count and they're getting ready to do a second one, now all of a sudden that's a great opportunity for me to slam your face into the turnbuckle or hit you with a low blow or something like that, because I know that you're trying to kill me. I know you're trying to put me away. Same thing for the baby face. At that point, they, you know, see them grab at the ropes and trying to get out the ring to just regroup themselves, you know, like do or come up with some sort of desperation reversal rather than, you know, the long down resting beat.
Yeah, because for me, in terms of my fandom when I was a kid, and, you know, you're watching Arn and Ole taking apart, you know, preliminary challenge or whatever, whenever they kicked out at two or whatever, they get mad. They're, oh, you want more pain? We're going to go after the arm. We're going to go after the leg again. They're going to just kick and stomp you a bit. It's like, okay, you're not going to give in. We're going to break your will a little bit more type of a thing. And it's just like, yeah, now it's just all the, oh my God, face from, you know, level three NXT, you know, kind of a thing. And you're like, why aren't you treating this like an actual sporting event and going, okay, I got tackled on the 1 yard line. I'm going to run the same play over again and try and get in the end zone this time.
Yeah. Disbelief is just simply not the only emotional spot right there. And I'm definitely, I lay this at the doorstep of WWE, but this happens in AEW as well, where these two counts, they don't become a major inflection point. In AEW, it's the opposite, where it's not even the renewed intensity for the kill shot. It's just like we get a big two and then we go into another crazy sequence where everyone's operating as though they're at full health.
Well, that's where the emotional resonance comes in on the Japanese strong style / you know, really athletic Kenny Omega type matches. The first kick out of the finisher, okay, now it's when it's going to get exciting type of a thing, and everybody kind of sits on their hands until then type of a thing. And then you do, you know, again, as you say, and that's my big problem with that style, is it's all at full speed again, just because the athletes are so good, and it's like you're trying to catch the guy you know, as opposed to actually having a strategy type of a thing where I'm working him down with
and
these
then, and
moves.
Then the WWE opposite is now it turns into spam X, you know, like yeah. spam your finisher. Like, okay, now we're going for the attitude adjustment again. No, I'm going for the GTS. No, I'm going for the attitude adjustment.
Yeah, we both have our finisher bars full. Right, we're just full. Both trying to hit it at the same time, but we just keep reversing and reversing and reversing. And maybe I'll hit your finisher and you'll hit my finisher and yeah.
Neither of those are satisfying. It's hard for me to sit there and tell you one's better than the other because I actually think they're both equally bad in different ways.
No, I would agree. I'm,
yeah.
I'm,
so no, this is nice, and that part of what why you, we like to do the different promotions thing, and you'll notice we just don't do a lot of WWE or AEW retrospectives in Vader Club because it's really nice to see promotions with different aesthetics
yes.
and consider what those match aesthetics could potentially entail for the modern style that we're regularly reviewing.
Poor Asuka. She has tweeted, I received an alert saying there have been multiple hacking attempts on X from Germany and to be cautious. Stop screwing with Asuka, everybody, please. Let her be happy in her life. Do you have an idea of what neighborhood you're going into for your Vader Club next week?
I don't know. I feel like I didn't do Macho and or DDP full justice with that last match. So I might need to find another DDP match or Macho match. Cause I love both those guys.
Okay.
I know.
I'll tell you where I'm going. I'll tell you where I'm going next and you can adjust. I think I'm going All Japan Tag.
And okay.
It might have to do with either the Fantastics or the British Bulldogs when they were both having short runs in All Japan in between things. So, yeah, we'll see. But
we shall see.
DDP and Savage, I mean, if you want to do Savage Steamboat.
I mean, we haven't done it yet. That one's certainly something that I will circle back to because I really do love that match. And obviously anyone who's like a wrestling aficionado knows the
writing. It's your personal
taste.
It's whatever you want to do. So yeah. go through their Rolodex, see what you like.
And sometimes I pick a match too, just because it gives me something interesting like to discuss. Like that old trick that they used to teach me when it was with editorial columns is it's not even necessarily good or bad. It's just anything that you can find that's provocative.
There's a point I saw and I like, oh, I enjoyed that. I want to talk about that kind of a thing. I've done that before. There was a match where it was like, there was a move and I was like, you never see that move, but I'd like to see it brought back type of a thing. I did that once. But we'll end it there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. Chris is only on the gram. You can follow him at DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do another show over on Fight Game Media on Wednesdays. It's called The Dynamite Show. Very creative name, but about 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air, Paul Fontaine and I are on YouTube Live breaking down all the stuff from AEW that week. It drops into your podcatchers for free the next morning if you choose to wait. But I'd appreciate you giving a listen. Chris is going to sell you a whole lot of things and you should buy them from him.
Yes, I teach. No, your audio cut out there.
Oh, dear,
I teach music lessons. And you can follow me on the Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV, and message me for music lessons if you are so moved. What else was I going to say? I don't know. Music lessons. Get music lessons. This is my cat. She's 20. She's adorable. And she's was out on the street last year, and now a year later, Jeffrey, she is home and in her house. And that's how I'm ending the show this week.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? And are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.